My name is Don, and I'm an alcoholic. I couldn't help it. His leg was there, yeah. Thank you, Paul, for the privilege of being here and hearing last night, Lynn. You were so beautiful. And hearing, what's his name?
Danny
Trejo, yeah, pardon me. His middle name is Anonymous. Anyway, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1970. Squeaky floor. So remember, that's the floor, not me. Anyway, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1970, and I had a what it was like. And now I'm in my, I'm 36 years sober plus. I used to say I'm in my 37th year, but I got to tell you, it's 36 years plus. And I have a what it was like, what happened, and what happened. And I don't have a what it's like now, and I don't know if I ever will. But I got a what happened. And what happened for me was I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 years by way of different judges. And I had a get caught problem. I got caught, and they gave me choices. And one of the choices was AA or jail. So I took the easier, softer way. And I did that for 10 years, never got any sobriety. I did get 21 days in 1968. I was going to the Nest, and they didn't have no 21-day chip, so that was the end of that. I got the big book because they said, if you don't have the big book, we don't want you to leave without the big book. If you don't have the funds, we understand that. We'll make liberal credit arrangements. So don't leave tonight without the big book. Even if you have to steal it. And so I stole the big book, right? Now, they didn't say to read it, so I never read it. And didn't get sober either. And so I came always because of different judges sending me because I got nailed, got captured. And in January of 1970, I was walking down the street in Van Nuys. I'd collected my last unemployment money. I wasn't eligible for any more. And I'm going from bar to bar, spending my unemployment money, meeting new friends. And I was on the way to the third bar, and I had an old Jim Clinton suit on. It was 8 or 9 years old, way too small. You remember Jim Clinton, huh? Anyway, it was 8 or 9 years old, way too small, shiny and sensitive areas. I had a clip-on tie, because in the bars, you know, you're getting a beef. If you have a wraparound tie, they'll choke you to death. So I had a clip-on tie. And this is a wraparound tie, so don't go grabbing it today. Everywhere I go, they always grab my tie. Hey, Don, what's happening? No, that's a wraparound, man. Don't do that. I don't like the wraparound, but my wife insists. Anyway, so I'm headed to the third bar to meet some new friends. And two guys come up behind me with a 2x4 and drop me. And they're going to roll a drunk. And I got up and I got the 2x4 away from them. I wiped them out with their own 2x4. And the police came and arrested these guys for rolling a drunk. And then they arrested the drunk, Lynn. And I went to jail again. And I went in front of the judge and I don't look up. I know I'm guilty. Everybody in the room knows I'm guilty. They're all giving me dirty looks. At least that's what I felt. And so I don't want to look at anybody. I'm looking down. Judge is up there. He's looking down. We're all looking down. And he said, 180 days in jail. And I looked up. You know, 180 days for drunk walking? I was convicted 6 times of drunk driving. And the most I ever got was 90 days. And this guy's giving me 180 days for drunk walking. And so I never talked to judges, but I started talking to him. And I started pleading with him and asking him, any chance, Your Honor, you could send me to Alcoholics Anonymous instead? I hear it works. Anyway, I pleaded with him, and after a while, he suspended my sentence, and he allowed me to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I made one big change. I've been coming for years, and I don't like rejection. And so I wouldn't bring out my court card. That was my big change. That way you wouldn't know I was sentenced by the courts, and that way you wouldn't reject me. And so that's what I did. Wouldn't bring out the court card. Went to meetings, drank, but not as often, and not before the meetings. And I did that until the early part of April. In the early part of April, some guy I met at a meeting in AA calls me up. He says, "Hey, Don, this is Andy." And I remembered him. He was a little pushy guy. Know what I mean, Larry? I remembered him. I said, "Hey, how you doing?" He says, "Hey, I'm not going to that meeting where I met you. This other guy and I are going to another meeting, and I was wondering if you want to go along with us." And I jumped at the chance. I said, "Yeah." And the reason I jumped at the chance is because the meeting where I met him, I was going to go there that night. And at that meeting, everybody in the room gave their first name and their date of sobriety. And every time I showed up there, I had a new date of sobriety. And I'm sensitive about that. So I jumped at the chance to go with these guys. And they were old timers. They had a month and a half sobriety. Everything was going beautiful for them. Jobs are going good. The families are all bubbly, you know. And I'm sitting in the back listening to them on the way to the meeting. And they're bragging about how beautiful sobriety is. And I'm glad for them, but I don't have those feelings. And I'm hoping they don't ask me anything. I don't like people that pry. You know what I mean, Harold? So I'm hoping they don't ask me. "How's your wife?" "She's bitter. What the hell's it to you?" "Hey, Don, what kind of work do you do?" "I'm hardcore unemployable." Is that a nice thing to say? It was the truth. "Hey, let's go to the coffee shop after the meeting, get a hot dog." Whatever. I didn't have a down payment on a hot dog. So I'm hoping they don't ask me anything. And I'm sitting there in the back, and we're tooling toward the meeting. And the driver, the pushy little guy, he says, "Hey, Don, when's the last time you had a drink?" And that's none of his business. That's my business. But I answered him, and I was honest. I said, "Saturday. This is Monday. I got my new sobriety date." And he said, "Saturday?" Like he was shocked. Big deal. I had some alcohol. I don't like people that assault me, even if it's oral. And so I wanted to minimize my guilt. And I said, "Yeah, I just got drunk on beer." And the guy said, "Beer? Maybe you're not an alcoholic, Don." I spent the next 15 minutes trying to convince him and the other alcoholic, the other old timer, that I was an alcoholic. Anyway, and I started going to meetings with those guys, and they'd go early. Can you believe that? Hour and a half early and make the coffee and put the chairs out, put the tables out, put the literature out, put the ashtrays around. And they had plenty of time. They had an hour and a half. And so I didn't help them. I watched them. And they'd put their keys down the front, like where you are, Joy. I don't want to sit in the front. I want to sit in the back where Bob is. You know, you can look around, right, Bob, and see who's coming in late. See who's wearing what, you know. See who's hitting on who. And you can't see that in the front. And if you turn around, Frank, and look at it, then they're all looking at you, you know. So I want to sit in the back. But these guys have put their keys down in the front, and they set the whole room up with it, so they got... And I'm trapped. I don't want to be there, but I'm with them. And so I put my house key down. My wife gave me a house key. And then the meeting would start, and people would get up and tell in a general way what they were like and what had happened to them. And I'd listen to these people as best I could. But anytime anybody said anything, I'd start thinking about my life. And I heard Clancy when I was a newcomer, and Clancy One of the things that he said was when he drank, he got false courage and he'd get into fights. And I didn't identify with that because I fought for years before I ever took my first drink. I'm one punch away from being completely ugly. I almost looked like the speaker last night. The early speaker, not you, Lynn. Danny. Danny was lightweight champion of San Quentin and then welterweight champion of San Quentin. This is before he got to, into the fellowship. I met him when I was a newcomer. Anyway, I boxed for 11 years. I went from lean and mean to lumpy and dumpy. I fought featherweight, which is 126 pounds, lightweight, 135 pounds, light welterweight, 139 pounds, welterweight, 147 pounds, middleweight, 160 pounds, light heavyweight, 175 pounds. I didn't fight heavyweight, and I didn't fight flyweight. Now I'm fighting overweight. Went from mean and lean to lumpy and dumpy. And it only took 11 years. Then I fought for 19 years in the bars, right? You can always find sparring partners in the bars. Anyway, so I didn't identify with Clancy. But I heard a guy named Keith who just passed away a few months ago. And Keith played football for the 49ers, San Francisco 49ers. And he played up in Canadian football. And one of the things that Keith said, he was talking about his early start in football. And he went to Bakersfield College. And they won a national JC football championship. And he got a scholarship up to Stanford University. And he went up to Stanford, and he couldn't cut it up there with all those rich kids. He lacked confidence. And so he transferred and went over to San Jose State. Well, when he started talking about lack of confidence, I started identifying. Because all my life, and I never thought about it before sitting in the front row of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've always had a problem with lack of confidence. I'm a nail biter. I don't know if you are. I'm an anda. I'm an alcoholic and a nail biter. Okay. And so that's lack of confidence. And I'd think about that when Keith was talking or somebody else was talking about the same problem. My lack of confidence, I can remember in the eighth grade, Mrs. Powell, my teacher saying, "Okay, Donald, it's your turn to give a report." I'd say, "Can I give it tomorrow, Mrs. Powell?" She said, "No, you said that yesterday. If you don't get up and give your report today, I'm going to give you an F." And I take an F. I don't stand in front of people. When I get in front of people, then I freeze. I don't know what to say. My mind goes blank. Lack of confidence. I've always had that. When I finally did start drinking, I didn't drink in high school. I started it when I was in the Marine Corps. And I went to the slop shoot with the rest of the guys, the bar. Beer bar, and I'd take a drink. My lack of confidence would subside. And as I continued drinking, it'd go away and I could talk to people. So I've always had that problem, lack of confidence. And that may not be your reason for being here, but it is mine, lack of confidence. That's the reason I drank. Didn't know anything about alcoholism. All I knew was I lack confidence. Didn't know it until I showed up and sat in the front row. And that was a reflection. Another big reflection on me was these people would talk about their spouses, especially Clancy. He really talked about his spouse. And I'd think about mine. I met this girl when she was 17. We dated for 14 months, and we got married. And 9 months and a minute later, she had a little kid. Now I'm thinking about that, Larry, when I'm in the front row, right? I'm trapped anyway. I got to think about something. And I'd think about her and the kid and the guilt I carried. And I used to, you know, try to get out of that guilt. Take them on a ride. Cheer them up. Take them up to Lake Arrowhead. You know, let them look at the lake for a while. And then we come down the mountain. The original McDonald's was in San Bernardino, right near Baseline and 4th. And I go to McDonald's. I buy a bunch of hamburgers and fries and shakes. I'd eat all of mine, half of theirs. And I'd watch other people, because I've always been a comparer. And I'd see a guy going down the road, Charlie, with his wife, right? And she'd be rubbing his neck. And I'd think, why the hell I don't get no neck rub? And I'd say to my wife, how come you never rub my neck? She'd say, I don't know, I never think about it. And I used to get frosted thinking of it, you know. Why did she ever think about me? Anyway. Then I don't know about you, but I have warm memories of the eighth grade, okay? I remember study hall. Remember that far back, Frank? Study hall. It was an hour of self-discipline. Do a book report, study for an examination. And I open up some book and I started reading, and I don't have good study habits. I got bored after a couple paragraphs. So I borrowed a bobby pin from this girl that was sitting next to me, straightened it out, and I put it between the book and the table. And I pretended like I was reading. I didn't want any attention drawn to me. And with this extended bobby pin, I went, twang. Isn't quite study hall. All the alcoholics in that eighth grade class bust out laughing when they heard the twang. And Bob, all the Al-Anons turned around and gave me a dirty look. This is the eighth grade. They haven't even started yet, right? They're not even married yet. And all the normal kids went on studying. And that started me off on a life of twanging. And that's what I think about in the front row of AA. That's what I did. I did that for a living. I'd go in a bar and somebody else would be twanging. I'd laugh because laughers are twangers. Twangers are laughers. Sooner or later, I'd get a chance to pull off a twang, hope that they'd laugh. I was always comparing my twang with their twang. Hey, sometimes I came up short, but I was always trying. One of my favorite twangs. Want to hear it, Joy? One of my favorite twangs. I'll get it. Probably at a bar. Anyway, my favorite twang was to go down. I buy my cigarettes in the drugstores. I don't buy them in the machines. I need my money. So I buy my cigarettes before I went to the bar. And then I'd ask the clerk, hey, you got a roll of pennies? And they usually did. So I buy a roll of pennies, 50 pennies. And I take the wrapper off, put the pennies in with the rest of my change, and head for the bar. I got my cigarettes. I got my pennies. I'm on a roll. That doesn't bother me. Anyway, and so I'd get in the bar to order a drink, right? And I start drinking, and I drink a lot. I go to the bathroom a lot. That's reasonable. And so when I go to the bathroom, I pull a penny out and I throw it in the urinal. And my pennies would start accumulating in there, right? And a lot of people count their drinks on the in-go. And they lose count after 8 or 9 or 10 drinks. Mine was always accurate on the out-go. If there were 41 pennies in the urinal, that meant I had about 41 drinks. Took a long time to count them. But I had no place to go but there. And then I'd come in later on, and there would be more than my pennies in there. I don't know if guys thought it was a wishing well or what. hope I score, or whatever they wished, you know. But they threw off my count. And I'd come in there later on, and all the pennies would be gone. And I'd go up and down the bar asking them, hey, Charlie, you got change for a nickel? Right? And I didn't care who took the money. I was twanging. Right? I was twanging. And I think about that in the front row of AA. I twanged. And then I, you know, tried to make it up to her because, you know, carrying a lot of guilt. Maybe I'll take her out to Oxnard. Cheer her up. Let her look at the ocean. So her and the kid, right, pack them up, head out to Oxnard. And coming back from Oxnard was Camarillo and the milk company, Ador Farms, was on the outskirts of Camarillo. And I'd go to Ador Farms, right, no admission charge. Go around looking at all the cows and the bulls. And then we'd hit another McDonald's. McDonald's was expanding just like I was. And I'd buy a bunch of hamburgers and fries and shakes, eat all of mine, half of theirs. See another guy going down the road getting his neck rubbed. And I'd say to my wife, look at that. Why don't you once ever think about rubbing my neck? Look at the guys over there rubbing his neck.
Nobody to do it for you, huh?
Anyway, every once in a while she'd put her hand up, make the attempt. And I'd smack her hand down. I'd say, keep your hand off of me. If you can't think of it on your own, I don't want you to touch me. And I'd give her the silent treatment. Down the road we'd go. Back to jail I'd go, right? I'm always going to jail. And then I lost my my license for 6 months. Then I lost my license for a year. And then the third conviction of 502, then they switched on me. And I started getting 23-102-A's. Same name, same charge, different numbers. So I got 3 502s and 3 23-102-A's. And every time I get from the third on, it would be a revocation of 3 years. So I was a total of 12 years and 9 months with a revoked license. Just the revoke, not counting the suspended. And I drove the whole time. Now, I don't know how many people are in here, don't hold up your hand, but a lot of us had revoked licenses, and some of us still do. I drove for 2.5 years in sobriety with a revoked license. I took Johnny up to the state prison at Tehachapi on my panel, right? I had a revoked license. He didn't know it. And why he didn't know it? Because I'm a perfect driver, that's why. And all revokers, not some of them, all revokers are perfect drivers. We drive with two hands on the wheel, one eye in a rearview mirror, tread on all four tires, right? We don't get pulled over. I never got pulled over. 12 years, 9 months, never got a ticket. Why? Because I'm perfect. Anyway, unless I'm drinking. Then they nailed me. Count one, driving under the influence. Count two, driving with a prior conviction. Count three, driving with a suspended or revoked license. I always got the multiple counts when I got nailed. But that's when I'm not, when I'm drinking. When I'm not drinking, I'm perfect. Anyway, I used to beg my wife to get in the car. She didn't want to get in the car with me. You couldn't tell the front from the rear, and either end had headlights. I'd do dishes for her, Paul. I'd vacuum for her. Do them both in 10 minutes. I was fast. I missed a lot of spots, but my motive was valid. Get them in the car. Take them out. Cheer them up. Get some of the heat off of me. Take them to Newhall. Out in Newhall, they had the William S. Hart Ranch. In fact, you used to live right near, didn't you? Remember when you lived out there? No admission charge. Go around looking at all the turkeys and the chickens and the pigs. And then we'd hit another McDonald's. I'd buy a bunch of hamburgers and fries and shakes. Eat all of mine, Harold. Half of theirs. See another guy going down the road, getting his neck rubbed. and not say anything to Marilyn because she wanted to break it. She didn't want to rub it. Anyway, I think about those things in the front row of AA when other people were talking. And a lot of other things. You know, and I always thought, the only reason I ever drank was to relax and enjoy myself. That's the only reason I drank. I don't know nothing about no alcoholism. I just drank to relax and enjoy myself. And I didn't know anything about this lack of confidence. You know, how can I be not confident? I had 113 fights in my 11 years that I fought. And I won 106 of them. I had 5 losses. I had 2 draws. I was a good fighter. I was, I won the Golden Gloves when I was 15 years old. I was too young to be in there, but they didn't know it. They thought I was a man. So did I. In the Marine Corps, I fought, and I was welterweight champion in Camp Pendleton. I was middleweight champion in the 5th Marines. I was selected on the all-Marine boxing team as a middleweight. And so I'm a good fighter. I'm confident physically. But yet I can't even stand up in front of people and talk. I lack confidence. And I would hear other people. And I never wanted to get away from that. Another thing I hope I get to is laziness. I love laziness. I'm a lazy bum, all right? And Alcoholics Anonymous took that away. And I never meant for that to go away. What do we find out when we get here? They encourage show up early, help set up, right? On the third day of going with those, Bob, where are you taking her? Huh? For a neck rub? They're speaking at the Al-Anon luncheon, so I got to be nice to them. Anyway. So when I was 3 days sober, the pushy little guy says, why don't you stick your hand out, Don? Other people are sensitive too. You're not the only one. Try to get acquainted. So only because he was watching, I went over to a couple guys. Hi, I'm Don. They said, hello, Don. And they introduced themselves to me, and then they ignored me. Clicky people. And they were talking about 13-step work or something. Then I went over to 5 or 6 people. I figured they weren't carrying on a personal conversation. I said, hi, I'm Don. They said, hello, Don. And they introduced themselves. Then they ignored me. And they were talking about somebody getting a 1-year cake, and I'm thinking, what a clicky place this is. I'm a newcomer, and they all ignore you. Then I saw a guy in the middle of the room. He looked like he had about a half an hour of sobriety. I could help the guy out. I had 5 days, you know. So I went over to him, and I was gentle because I don't want to scare away the newcomer. And I said, hi, I'm Don. He said, hello, Don, I'm Arvo. And I deepened my voice so I could get in command. And I said, how long have you been sober, Arvo? He said, 6.5 years. Why? I said, oh, nothing. Then I went over to this other guy who was all alone. I figured, I want to get acquainted. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll ask him something about alcohol. So after we introduce it, yeah, I know. So after we introduced each other, I said, hey, what did you used to drink? He looked at me real weird. He said, what are you, a writer for the Grapevine? I didn't even know what the Grapevine was. Why does a guy want to attack me? I'm a newcomer. So I quit talking to people again, the heck with it. And I would go around saying, hello, I'm Don. Hi, I'm Don. Hi, I'm Don. Hello, I'm Don. D-O-N. A D-A-W-N back there. Anyway. D-O-Don. Hello, I'm Don. Guy asked me one time, where's the toilet? I said, hi, I'm Don. And I was real sensitive, right? Anyway, sensitive about this squeaking, too. It's all on your side, too. You're not squeaking. Anyway, so in my about third month of sobriety, I'm carrying a lot of guilt because, you know, the basket goes by, I stiff it. And the reason I stiff it is because I'm unemployed. And I go to the bathroom, even if I don't have to go to the bathroom. Or I pretend like I put something into it. Or I pretend like I missed the basket. What happened to the basket? As if I cared. And so we're doing the cleanup after the meeting, and the little pushy guy and I are there, and I said to Andy, hey, and I told him what I just told you. And he said, what are we doing right now? I said, we're cleaning up. He said, that's contributing to the meeting. Don't worry about the basket. You'll be able to put into it someday. And that was my first awareness of the release of any kind of guilt. And I, from then on, I took the basket and I passed it on. And it seems like things really started clicking off faster in the release of guilt area. People, places, and things. When I was 4 months sober, I think, 4.5 months sober, I was in the meeting, and it was a participation part of the meeting, and a guy named Marv got up, and Marv lives in Vegas now. And Marv was saying, don't take that first drink. One drink's too many and 1,000 isn't enough. Have some more milk, kid. And I'd heard that lots of times, right? And so I'm ignoring, and I'm biting away because I'm a nail biter. And I pulled my finger out, and I thought to myself, I wonder if I could put this program to work in my fingernail biting problem. They say any problem you have, you apply the steps, it'll work. They work if you work them. You want to lose some weight? Put the plug in the plate. And then I thought, oh, wait a minute, I got a little left there. I'll go ahead and hit my bottom. So I went on biting. Then after the meeting, we did the cleanup and went over to the coffee shop where you get heavy into AA, take the inventory of the speaker. And I walked in, and there were 35, 40 AAs and Al-Anon sitting around. And there was this Al-Anon sitting there. Her name was Polly. And she was biting away. And I had no plan. I'd just been going to meetings every day and every night. Unemployed, I go every day and every night. And so I had no plan. But I walked up to her and I said, don't take that first bite. One bite's too many and 1,000 isn't enough. She looked at me like, what the hell are you talking about? And I sat down with her. And we started sharing one nail biter to the other. I told her, if you don't take the first bite, there's going to be growth. I never thought about that before, but nails grow if you don't touch them, right? I never thought about that before AA, right? I also told her, if you don't take the first bite, there's going to be fringe benefits. Now, I didn't know what they were. I've never been on, you know, I've never had nails in my life, so I don't know anything about fringe benefits. Well, we quit biting that night. And the fringe benefit is, for years, all of my life, I've been ashamed of my hands. I always hid them under my armpits or under my jelly belly. Or I didn't tell you about the jelly belly, did I? I'll go back to that, can I? And remind me to come back to this. In a bar, you know, I go into bars. I like bars that are lively, right? You do too, Harold. I've heard your story. And, you know, if it's a dead bar, I want to liven the place up a little bit, you know, even if it's just music. And so I'll go over to the jukebox and I'll look over the selections and look, see what they got. You know, I don't play junk. I play songs that have a message, right? The Impossible Dream, remember that, by Jack Jones? You're too young, Rosie. You don't remember that one. And then Little Green Apples by O.C. Smith. And when I heard that song, it reminded me of my wife. She wasn't that way, but that's the way I wanted her to be. In the song, he'd call her up in the middle of the day, and she'd drop what she was doing and come down and meet him because she was made that way.
God, I love that.
And so that's the way I wanted my wife to be, right? So if it was C1 on the jukebox, I'd punch C1 three times and throw a quarter in, right, and punch C1 three times. And then come back a little while later, if nobody else played the jukebox, throw another quarter in, punch C1 three more times. And about the 12th time of hearing Little Green Apples, some big guy come out to me and he'd say, "Hey, bottle ass, why don't you play D8? You know, and I'm sensitive. Don't call me bottle ass or jelly belly or liver lips or triple chin. So I'd punch D8 just like he said. Then I'd turn around and punch him. He never knew it was coming. I'd cold cock him. And the bartender would 86 me. I didn't call him bottle ass. He called me that. And yet, I'm 86. I got to go to be a newcomer in another bar. Now, I never got 30 days in any bar. Always a newcomer, Don. Anyway, where was I in recovery now? Nail biting. Oh, yeah. Anyway, so in the nail biting recovery, I got nails, and I've never had them before. That's fantastic. But one of the biggest fringe benefits I have, you know, other pray, people go to church, they pray like that. I always prayed like that. I'm ashamed of my hands. I'm no longer ashamed of my hands. I get self-respect in the hand area. That's a fringe benefit. But the biggest fringe benefit I got is, for years, my wife used to ask me for a back scratch. Best I could give her was a nub rub. And now I can scratch her back, and she loves it. Then when I was 5 and a half months sober, Charlie, I'm going down to Ralph's to get some ice cream. I drove, I told you, for 2.5 years in sobriety with a revoked license. So I'm perfect. And my wife's in the car with me. I haven't had a drink in 5 and a half months, right? Heading down the Rouse. And a guy goes riding by me, Joy, with his wife, and she was rubbing his neck. And I didn't say anything. And I hope my wife hadn't seen it. And for the first time in our marriage, Ed, right? Isn't it Ed back there? It ain't Ed. What's your name? No, you. No, yeah. Vince, no wonder I've been calling you Ed for 2 days. Vince, huh? Okay, Vince. Anyway, where was I? Necro, yeah, Necro. Oh, no, Rouse, wasn't it? Rouse. So heading down the road, get my ice cream. You got that right. And anyway, she didn't see it. And for the first time in our marriage, I put my hand up and I started rubbing her neck. I'd never done that before. Oh, she loved it. Oh. She moaned. Oh. I hadn't had that much response from her, Don, since our third date. You know, damn. I loved hearing the moans. I rode around Rouse 3 times rubbing her neck. Listening to the moans. And then a couple of days later, I'm going down to Vons to get my ice cream. I don't buy my ice cream in the same place. Cashiers might think I got a problem. So I'm a revoking, so I'm a perfect driver. I'm doing 34 and a half and a 35. Vons coming up 2 blocks on the left, start my signal early. And a hand went up on my neck, and she started rubbing my neck. And I tell you, I got a lump in my throat. And I got misty-eyed. And I'm getting attention from my wife. Just going to meetings. and not drinking in between. Is that beautiful? Boy, oh boy. I choke up when I think about that. And you know what? I'm married 53 years and I still rubberneck. Oh, she loves it. And she still moans. If she don't moan, I'm out of there. And I told you I was releasing people, places, and things. It seemed to be so rapid. And one of the things that I've carried a burden all of my life, Larry, was I rolled a guy one time. I never rolled a drunk before, but that one. And he had plenty of money on him, and I needed 40 bucks. And I took his money out of his pocket, and I took 40, and I put the rest of his money back. And I carried that guilt until 5.5 months sober. And how do you release that kind of a thing? You make amends. The man died in 1965. I couldn't make amends to him. But I was on the freeway, and I rolled up the windows. And I said, "Dad, I'm sorry. When I rolled my dad, I could never look at him in the eye again." And that, I rolled him in 1950, maybe 51. And he died in 1965, and I could never make amends to him again, But I made amends on the freeway that day. And I told him, "Dad, if you could see me now, I'm going to meetings. Today I'm not doing anything wrong. Today I'm a positive example that Alcoholics Anonymous works, and I'm helping others, and I hope you forgive me." And I hope he heard that. But what I did was release it from me. I had carried that guilt all those years. And then when I was 6 months sober, I went to my first AA convention. And it was a Southern California convention held every year. And in 1970, they held in Bakersfield. And I got 12 rooms in Motel 6 because they were clean, economical, $6 each. And they gave them out to different people from my home group. And I gave out one room too many, and I wound up one room short. But because I made the reservations, I got the choice of the beds. So I took the vibrator bed. You know, you throw a quarter in, you vibrate for 20 minutes and trip off to happy land. Right? So we went to the meetings at the convention, all the different meetings. And we went to the marathon meeting, spent hours in there. And went back to the room about, yeah, I was sleeping with one of the old timers that had a month and a half on me. And anyway, he jumped in his non-vibrator bed. And I brought 3 quarters back purposely from my vibrator bed, right? Threw the first quarter in, tripped off, man. And this guy snored through all 3 of my quarters. And I don't know when I finally fell off to sleep. And the next morning, I was over in the hospitality center, and I saw Keith. And I went over and I told Keith, "I couldn't sleep all night. Kirk snored." Keith, my sponsor, gave me direction. That's what sponsors are for. If you don't, and I meant to ask you, anybody here with less than 30 days? 30 days or less? One, what's your name?
Mark.
Mark, and how many days you got?
I got 13
today. All right, all right. You're the second most important person in this room. I'm the most important. Look, I got a bag, man. I'm telling you, I stayed sober, they gave me a badge. I got the highest achievement you can get, sober. That's a big award, just being sober. Anyway, so I told Keith, and Keith gave me directions. That's what sponsors are for. And so I went to the meetings that day and that night. And again, we came in real late, about 1:30 or 2 in the morning, and he jumped in his non-vibrator bed. And I went over, and I tucked him in, and I kissed him on the lips goodnight. And he stayed awake watching me all night. And I got some sleep. So I'm telling you, it pays to have a sponsor. Now I'm on the road to recovery, right? I'm on the road to recovery. And good things are happening. And my wife was still bitter. It took a while for that bitterness to go away. And I used to tell her, I love you. And she'd say, yeah, sure. I do. No, you don't show it. Well, I'm trying to. How can I prove it to you? She said, you can't. I don't think you love me. I don't think you ever did. I said, I love you. I can prove it. She said, prove it. I said, when I'm making love to somebody else, I close my eyes and I pretend it's you. I told her that. She looked at me like, yeah. So when I was 11 and a half months sober, 2 more weeks, I'm going to get my 1-year cake. I'm looking forward to it. And Kurt, the push and the snorer, and Andy, the pushy guy, had both given me the honor of giving them their cake, their 1-year cake, a month before. Now in 2 more weeks, I'm going to get mine. We're talking about it. I wanted Andy to give it to me at the Sunday night meeting, Kurt to give it to me at the Tuesday night meeting. And we're talking about that, and this newcomer lady came up, and she said, hello, I'm Vera. And we said, hello, Vera. And then we ignored her and went on talking about my cake. And Vera went walking away, mumbling little nasties under her breath. And I heard her, and I went over and I got her and I brought her back, and I told her what we were talking about. And Vera's still with us. She's not here today, huh?
Still asleep.
I gave Vera her 35-year cake. And Vera knows, like I know, like Harold knows, like Bob knows, like Larry knows, and I could go around the room. Charlie, all the people that have time know that there are no cliques in Alcoholics Anonymous. There are bonds. And that the bonds aren't on a temporary basis, they're on a forever basis. When you hear the communication in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not temporary, it's not transient, it's on a forever basis. And I got my 1-year cake, and different AAs gave me my 1-year cake. When I was 5 years sober, I asked Marilyn, my wife, to come down to the AA meeting and give me my 5-year cake. And she did. 5 years without a drink. And then when I was 10 years sober, I thought, I think I'll call a judge up. Let him give me a cake. But I ruptured my appendix, and I got peritonitis. And I didn't take a 10-year cake. But 3 weeks before my 11th birthday, I called a judge up. And I said, Your Honor, you sentenced me to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1970. I still go to the meetings. And in 3 weeks, they're going to give me a cake with 11 candles on it representing 11 years without a drink. Is there any possibility you could come to the AA meeting and present the cake? And after a pause, he said, That'd be a privilege. He asked if he could bring his wife. Neither one of them had ever been to an AA meeting before. He knew a lot of people there. Norm Alpe was the speaker that night. And it was a perfect night. And he brought the cake up. And I blew out the candles, and I thanked the judge on behalf of the California Highway Patrol. LAPD and Culver City Police and Englewood Police, Long Beach Police. San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department, Barstow Police, Azusa Police, and a lot more, but Azusa Police. One night I was in a bar down on 12th and Figueroa, a bar called the Continental, and it was a lively place. And it was 1:30 in the morning, and I started thinking, which is bad. You know, if you're going to drink, drink. Don't think. I started thinking. Every time I ever think, I get in trouble when I'm drinking. And I started thinking, I'm not drunk. I can't get drunk by 2 o'clock. I'll go finish my drink in Vegas. They never close. So I left the bar at 12th and Figueroa, and I'm heading for Vegas to finish my drink. And this is before the freeways. So I'm on the old foothill, 66, and got captured in Azusa. I was coming out here today, yesterday, on the 210, going by Azusa, right? In Irwindale, they got the Miller's Brewery, right? Big brewery, right? And they got our triangle, only it's upside down. And there's a clue right there, right? The base of our triangle's on the bottom, right? And the point's up. On theirs, the point's down. And on the inside of their triangle, did you ever read that? You haven't really, Joy? You ought to read it. You know what it says? Think when you drink. I damn near hit the center divider when I saw it. I couldn't believe they'd put that out. Think when you drink, man. Every time I think, I get in trouble. You know, guys staring at me in the, you know, I don't like people staring at me in the bars. I tell like, hey, I'm married. Don't be staring at my fly. Right? And a beef, right? They get angry with me. And so anyway, where was I? No, I'm telling the judge, yeah. Anyway, so this is the hard part of the meeting now. I'm trying to find something way to close. I've never been able to do a good close. Like, thank you. I've never said thank you. And I should. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, the fun was over. I'm just going to go to these meetings and exist. No more fun. And I believed that for, you know, like a week or two, maybe, I don't remember, but a very short time. And then it started becoming fun. You know, I quit twanging. I quit twanging and in the bars. And then I quit laughing when other people twanged in the bars. And all I did was just go to the bars. And I had a dream. I had a lot of dreams before, and some of my dreams came true and some didn't. Sometimes I sought out lesser dreams. And my dream, and I don't know how long it lasted, for a number of years, in the latter part of my drinking. And the dream was, someday I'm going to be sober. Someday I'm going to be able to provide for my family. Someday I'm going to have some love and respect for my family. And that was just a dream, because I couldn't get off the bar stool. And now I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm going to meetings with those guys, and now I got a year, and now I got 5, and now I got 11, now I got 36 years. And I've been in this dream for a long time. People always say, you got to be in the reality, right? Well, reality was bad, man. I remember the reality. Sitting in that bar and wanting to change, and I can't change. Why can't I change? I want to. Why can't I? I don't know. It just ain't happening. And then I met a guy like you. And I met a girl like you. And then I met you. And suddenly, you're making me change. And now I'm in that dream. I'm able to provide for my family. I'm in my 54th year of marriage, and I'm rubbing her neck, and I'm listening to the moans. I tell you, I could have missed it all if it hadn't been for you. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.